Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. For decades, I've been preaching about the importance of a regimen of basic supplements that everyone should consider part of their daily health routine. So I came up with an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. The very same supplements I take myself and prescribe for my patients. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com and check out my Intelligent Medicine Starter Kit. It's a short list of the basic supplements that I recommend as a starting point for those looking to take control of their health. They're the essential elements of a basic program that everyone could benefit from. And for a limited time, you'll get 10% off and free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to DearHoffmanStore.com. That's DearHoffmanStore.com.
Welcome to Layla Weighs In, here on Intelligent Medicine. Thank you for joining me. I'm going to ask you to bear with me a little bit today. If you hear me cough, I'm getting over a cold. I want to thank you for your questions. You can reach me at radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. I welcome your questions, your topics of interest. Anything else you want to tell me about with regard to health, wellness, nutrition, all of the above? Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in to Intelligent Medicine. Once again, you can reach me at radioprogram@AOL.com. I have an email from Cheryl. Dear Layla, will eating 4 prunes a day help preserve bone density? I've been reading the research that says it helps with bone density, but I'm not sure if eating that many prunes is worth the concentrated sugar and calories. What is your opinion? Well, prunes, okay. Prunes are actually a great idea for bone mineral density. It's one of many very good ideas, the first being an anti-inflammatory diet, strength training, getting adequate amounts of magnesium, vitamin D, vitamin K. Nobody is low in calcium. Notice that I didn't say pop a calcium supplement every day. We're not recommending that much calcium anymore. Anyway, let's look at this. I've got a comprehensive review here from Nutrients, the journal Nutrients. Dried plums, prunes, and bone health, a comprehensive review. Now, the National Osteoporosis Foundation estimates that over half of Americans age 50 plus years have either osteoporosis or low bone mass. Now, dried plums, also called prunes, have a unique nutrient and dietary bioactive profile and are suggested to exert beneficial effects on bone. So to further clarify and summarize the potential mechanisms and effects of dried plums on bone health, a comprehensive review of the scientific literature was conducted. Now, anyone who's anyone in the scientific field, and all of us included, know that the place to go is PubMed. PubMed database was searched through January 24th, 2017 for all cell, animal, population, and clinical studies that examine the effects of dried plums and or extracts of the former on markers of bone health. 24 studies were included in the review and summarized. The beneficial effects of dried plums on bone health may be in part due to the variety of phenolics present in the fruit. Animal and cell studies suggest that dried plums and or their extracts enhance bone formation and inhibit bone resorption. through their actions on cell signaling pathways that influence osteoblast and osteoclast differentiation. The cells that build bone, the cells that break down bone, all of that, and the differentiation of those. These studies are consistent with clinical studies that show that dried plums may exert beneficial effects on bone mineral density. So, long-term prospective cohort studies using fractures and bone mineral density as primary endpoints are needed to confirm the effects of smaller clinical, animal, and mechanistic studies. Clinical and prospective cohort studies in men are also needed, since they represent roughly 29% of fractures. Hey, did you know that? Men have osteoporosis too. I've seen them in my practice. And likewise, besides looking at men, because they represent roughly 29% of fractures, and likewise diverse race and ethnic groups. Absolutely. No adverse effects were noted among any of the studies included in this comprehensive review. And while the data are not completely consistent, remember this is a review, right? This suggests that postmenopausal women may safely consume dried plums as part of their fruit intake recommendations, given their potential to have protective effects on bone loss. And this is from the journal Nutrients. It's a review called Dried Plums, Prunes, and Bone Health, a Comprehensive Review by Taylor C. Wallace. This is from the Department of Nutrition and Food Studies, George Mason University, Fairfax, Virginia, and the Think Healthy Group Incorporated in Washington, D.C. Now, Cheryl is concerned about the sugar and the calories, so let me talk about that. We know that plums, before you dry them and they become prunes, an average-sized plum is low in carbohydrates. It's maybe 6, 7, 8 grams of carbs for that medium-sized plum. And of course, when you dry a fruit, it concentrates the fructose, it concentrates the sugars. It's easy to eat more than one because they're smaller, right? Now, looking at a serving size of prunes, 1/4 cup is your general serving size of prunes. That's approximately 40 grams. This 1/4 cup size or 40 gram serving of prunes is about 100 calories. The carbohydrate grams of this 1/4 cup serving is 26. So 26 grams of carbs. And in this serving, this 1/4 cup or 40 gram serving of prunes is 3 grams of fiber. And you know about net carbohydrates, right? We subtract the amount of fiber from the total carbs. So it's 26 grams of carbs minus 3 grams of fiber. Our net carbs are 23. These are the carbohydrates that impact blood sugar. These are the carbs, the carb amount to be concerned about, right? So think about this. For 100 calories, 23 grams of carbs, and for those of you who are on a low-carb diet, 23 grams, really, if you're in ketosis, is your daily allotment. And the prunes are going to blow that out of the water. What are you going to eat then? All that's left is meat, maybe a little bit of lettuce. Not a very appetizing diet, is it? What I would suggest, and I enjoy prunes from time to time, and figs, and other fruit, and the darker the colors, the more nutrients, all of that. Cut the serving in half. If you have instead 1/8 cup, that's 20 grams. If you're using a food scale, you have the option of weighing in both ways. It's only 50 calories then. And you're only getting, if you were getting 23 net grams of carbs, you're only getting about 11, 11 and a half. Right? 12 maybe grams of carbohydrate. That's a little bit better. And who says you have to eat the prunes every day to get the benefit, right? What's really wonderful about this particular fruit is the enhancement to bone formation, the inhibition of bone resorption. It's basically helping to slow down that turnover of bone. Remember, bone is living tissue. It is meant to be broken down, turnover, and new bone rebuilt back up. This is what the cells do, the osteoblasts, the osteoclasts. We rely on them. When that bone turnover increases rapidly, then we say osteoporosis, because that the breaking down of bone can't keep up with the new bone formation, thereby showing, if you look at bone under a microscope, you see more holes. That's osteoporotic bone, which all starts with osteopenia, right? The diminishing of bone in the beginning. And postmenopause, this can increase rapidly. So by slowing down the breaking down of bone, which is often, you know, the mechanism of action of bisphosphonate drugs like your Fosamax, Actonel, Boniva, all of those, is they super slow down the breakdown of bone. But the danger in that is, remember, bone is living tissue. It's supposed to turn over. It's not meant to be stopped. Then, in the case of taking bisphosphonates, these osteoporosis medications, is it almost halts that breakdown of bone, and you're left with then old brittle bone, which was not allowed to break down and carry on its normal function. And that's the danger in bisphosphonates. Include a few prunes daily, every other day. Cheryl, I don't see the harm unless you are completely in ketosis, where you're really going to have to weigh it out. Maybe you're just going to eat a prune a day, possibly a larger one at that instead of a smaller one. You could weigh it out. Have, instead of the usual quarter cup, have an eighth of a cup. That could be something. I think this can be added to most people's diets without much danger. Those with diabetes, be a little more cautious. That's always the way to go, right? So you want to be careful of your complete sugar intake. Cheryl, I thank you for this question, and I think prunes could be a healthy part of one's diet. For those with constipation, you get the added benefit of laxation, of being able to move your bowels. And for those who are having too much in that area, too many frequent bowel movements, don't eat so many prunes. And be careful, figs can have the same impact on your bowel function. Cheryl, thank you for that question. I've got an email from Bonnie. Hi, Layla. Jane Brody is making me crazy. Jane Brody is the columnist in the New York Times, the Science Times, which comes out on Tuesdays. Can you respond to her piece in a podcast, her piece in the Science Times about saturated fats? Yes, Bonnie, thank you for this. And again, this was from the January 29th issue of the Science Times, New York Times. So, good fats, bad fats. Jane Brody is basically, and unfortunately, regurgitating very old information. And she writes, "The media love contrarian man-bites-dog stories that purport to debunk long-established beliefs and advice. Among the most popular on the health front are reports that saturated fats do not cause heart disease and that vegetable oils we've been encouraged to use instead may actually promote it. But," she writes, "the best established facts on dietary fats say otherwise. how well polyunsaturated vegetable oils hold up health-wise when matched against saturated fats like butter, beef fat, lard, and even coconut oil depends on the quality, size, length of the studies, and what foods are eaten when fewer saturated fats are consumed. So, she continues, before you succumb to wishful thinking that you can eat well-marbled steaks, pork ribs, and full-fat dairy products with abandon, you'd be wise to consider the findings of what is probably the most comprehensive, commercially untainted review of the dietary fat literature yet published. They are found in the 26-page advisory prepared for by, you guessed it, American Heart Association, and published last June by a team of experts led by Dr. Frank M. Sachs, Professor of Cardiovascular Disease Prevention at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Now, this advice coming from American Heart Association, who is still touting the health benefits of vegetable oils, needs to be debunked over and over and over again. But then when you have journalists writing in popular newspapers like the New York Times continuing to uphold this unworthy information, it's a shame. And it's not good for the public trust, because the public is being yanked around by all the different information that's out there. Now, here's the thing, and I will reiterate. Saturated fats are not bad. Now, Jane Brody does at least point out that some studies may have failed to show a benefit from reducing saturated fats because participants substituted margarine and other partially hydrogenated vegetable oils containing trans fats that were later shown to be even more damaging to blood vessels than animal fats. Kudos for mentioning that. There was a problem, she goes on to say, in the Sydney Heart Study conducted from 1968 to 1973. The experimental group was given margarine high in trans fats, resulting in more cardiovascular events than among those who continued to eat lots of saturated fat, like butter. On the other hand, as Dr. Sachs' team summarized the results of four core trials conducted in the 1960s, lowering saturated fat and replacing it with vegetable oil rich in polyunsaturated fat, primarily soybean oil free of trans fat, lowered coronary heart disease by 29%, similar to the benefit from taking a statin to reduce cholesterol. Now, the problem with this is all of these were done in the setting of high carbohydrate diets. None of these were done in the setting of a less than 50% calorie a day of carbohydrate intake. So, here's the thing. In later studies, the most important influence on the result was the types of foods study participants ate in place of saturated fats and other fats, for example. In a study of 252 British men who had suffered heart attacks following a low-fat, high-carbohydrate diet, reduced cholesterol levels by a meager 5% and had virtually no effect on future heart attacks. The carbohydrates they ate were mainly refined, low-fiber flours and sugars that promote weight gain and diabetes, two leading risk factors for heart disease. This is true. In North America and Europe, the team noted the effect of lowering saturated fat was essentially negated by people's consumption of more refined grains, fruit juice, sweet desserts and snacks, sugar-sweetened beverages, and other foods that hardly promote good health. Now, unfortunately, they are still advising a focus on Mediterranean-style diet, heavy on plant foods and unsaturated vegetable oils, with whole grains like brown rice and bulgur, fruits and vegetables as the main sources of carbohydrates. This Mediterranean diet, while all well and good, if you really look at it, especially with its focus on its low in fat and its emphasis on whole grains, looks a lot like the food guide pyramid. So this Americanized Mediterranean diet, in my opinion, has been bastardized. Okay? And unfortunately, Dr. Sachs of American Heart, that advisory committee, said the advice derived from the best research is pretty straightforward. Consume fewer saturated fats like butter, full-fat dairy, beef, pork fat, coconut, palm kernel oils, and replace them with vegetable oils high in polyunsaturates, corn, soybeans, safflower, sunflower, peanut, grapeseed oils. Oh no, these are very high in omega-6 oils. Bonnie, you know that American Heart still hasn't gotten it, and they're still relying on this over and over again mantra of your vegetable oils, and it's unfortunate. And another untruth, Dr. Sachs says, is for coconut oil. It's the nutritional fat du jour, but it has not been proven to be helpful. It's fine to use on your body as a moisturizer for skin and hair, but not necessarily in your body, although consuming small amounts is unlikely to be harmful. Again, this is old advice, and it's unfortunate that Jane Brody has regurgitated more very old advice that has been debunked. Hey, maybe she had a week off and had to come up with this old article or rework it because she was going on vacation. Who knows? But again, you can't believe everything you read, especially in so many mainstream newspapers, as we know. So Bonnie, I would advise you to pay more attention to intelligent medicine, as I know you do. And I thank you for this question, and I thank Cheryl for her question. Thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In, here on Intelligent Medicine. This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.